All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
I feel like you're going to be like probably the most interesting guest if I can ask the right questions to get the right answers, you know.
We'll find out.
That's right. That's right. Well, what's going on, boss man?
Just another day watching you guys work.
You're listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland.
First off, let's start here. Mr. Blaze Burwell, we really appreciate you and your family's hospitality for letting us come and stay in your shop. And we've learned a lot from you guys. So we, again, greatly appreciate that. We're super excited to have you on our podcast here today. Welcome back to another episode of Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland. Like I said, special guest, Blaze Burwell.
I'm excited. Let's get it done.
All right. Let's jump right into it. So I guess this is kind of more personal side of it, but like, when were you born? How old are you? You know, just kind of tell us about your family and stuff like that.
So I'm 30. I was born January 94. I guess I was born into the racing life, and I grew up in it, and never got away.
Well, who in your family was racing at the time that you were growing up?
So the whole time I was growing up, my dad raced. My grandpa raced before him. I guess I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, it was in the blood for sure, the bloodline.
That's right.
Well, what were they racing at the time?
Both super late models.
Okay. I got you. What do you remember what chassis and stuff they were in at the time?
I don't. Leaf Springs.
Yeah, that was way back. Back when Blomqvist and Jimmy Mars and all of those guys were on top of it. Well, I guess they were in the 2000s. I mean, you know more about the late model world. We were talking about the doors and stuff surrounding the shop, and I'm not very late model cultured, so correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, back that was probably like Billy Moyer, Donnie Moran days, yeah.
Okay, I got you. Well, right on. Well, tell us what your life was like growing up. Like, what? Obviously, you were at the racetrack pretty frequently, but like, what did it look like growing up for you? What did you do for fun? And you know, how was life?
Life was good. I mean, I guess like when I was a little kid, I was at the racetrack all the time, and then my parents separated, and I kind of just hung out at my mom's more than I did anything. Kind of got away from the sport. Just grew up like a normal kid. I guess I raced go-karts there in my like grade school years. But other than that, I was pretty normal for a while.
Well, what did you like? I guess were you just devouring racing at a young age? Like, did you know as a child in grade school go-kart racing, like, man, I want to be a super late model driver? Like at that age, did you dream of being where you're at today?
Oh yeah. I mean, I never thought I'd get where we're at, but, you know, every teacher asks you what you want to be when you grow up, and every kid's answer is a race car driver, and we just made it happen.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Mikey's got me some questions right here, so I'm going to go through those, but, I think one of the first one that we were laughing about when we talked about we were going to have a podcast, you got a deep voice. Let's hear your deepest voice.
My deepest voice?
Yeah.
I don't think I have a deep voice.
Well, we think you do, but let's go through some of these. Let's start here. Where does the 44 come from?
That was actually my grandpa's number. And then my dad rocked it for a little while, and it just kind of stuck. Go-kart racing, I was number 53. After a local guy here, and I didn't even take my dad's number, but we started big car racing, and it was 44.
I got you. Well, why did your grandpa pick the 44? Is there a reason behind it? Is there something behind the 44?
I'm actually not sure. I never asked.
Really? Nope. Okay. Well, that's cool.
44 is not as cool as 45.
It comes before 45. That's what I tell 45. People all the
yeah,
time.
That's right.
Like, people start talking about, you know, and I think you can pick up what I'm laying down, what comes after 45, you know, they're like, he'll be there and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you know what comes before that?
Yeah, that's right.
The 45. So the 44 is before the 45. But I guess along the lines of everything that we talked about briefly, let's talk about, you know, I talked to you away from the mics and everything about your life and stuff and what you were doing for a job before you obviously started what you have today. What'd you do for a job in high school?
In high school, I delivered pizzas and worked at O'Reilly's, sold parts, you know.
what was the most wild thing that somebody ever asked you for in O'Reilly's? Like what was the hardest thing that you had to come up with, or something that you were like, what?
Man, you know, being young, like all my buddies came in there and asked for the stupidest stuff just to, you know, I guess, I don't know.
They try to throw you off, huh?
That's right.
Did any of them ask for any blinker fluid or anything?
Oh, yeah, blinker fluid. I mean, muffler bearings, anything like that.
Well, I got you. So you were working at O'Reilly's. That this was at what age? Like give us a time frame in high school and stuff like that, the pizza stuff, all of that.
Probably like 17, 18, I think.
Okay. And at the time you were doing that, and like I said, this is just me going off of what we talked about earlier. You were doing those things, and along the side, when did you get parts for race cars? Like how did you come across parts? Like what'd you buy that led you into selling parts?
So actually, after like my high school jobs, I delivered furniture for a furniture store here in town, and I did that for 4 years, I think. And I got the parts deal. Actually, that was like after I started racing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then let's start there. Thank you for that. So I guess Tommy's who we need to talk about now. Tommy was racing the four cylinder division, the Bang Banger division.
Yeah, the Bang Bangers. Yeah, a buddy of mine raced four cylinders, and I don't know, like there's probably like a couple years there he tried to get me to drive his car, and I was like, man, I don't want to drive a four cylinder. Not knocking any four cylinder guys, but that wasn't my life goal. He finally did. He got me to drive it, and I kind of enjoyed it. So we did that for a year. And then I decided I wanted to race a big car. And I bought one, and it came with a whole bunch of stuff. And I sold off all the extra stuff and just found out there was a market for all everybody's used parts. And we just kind of went around buying stuff and selling stuff, and it took off, and here we are.
So it's a little more in depth than that from what you told me earlier. So you purchased the cars and stuff, and you started selling the equipment, and you were still working at the furniture store, moving furniture, I'm sorry. And at that point, you were like, man, I think I can make a career out of this. And you had some things come up because you said you were working the furniture stuff throughout the day, and then in the evenings you were handling parts.
Yeah, you know how it is. I mean, like this race car stuff's a 40-hour a week job as it is, and I was working my real job, and then I'd get off of work and we'd go to the shop and work on the race car for a little while, and I'd box up parts, and then the next day, like at lunch, I'd have to go to the post office and ship stuff, and it got to be like, 18 hours a day. I felt like I was working. What was it? I had to go pick up a car like through the week. And I asked my boss for a day off, and she wouldn't give me the day off. And we kind of got into it. And I said, look, I'm not going to miss this deal I'm going to have to quit my job. And I was actually just trying to get her to, call my bluff. And she didn't. She told me that the only way I was getting off is if I was quitting my job. So I said, fine. I didn't show up.
So that was the final straw. And, were you nervous at that point? Were you? I mean, it kind of sounds like you were a good employee, so you had to have been kind of upset that you lost the job, even though you were doing kind of what you loved on the side.
Well, yeah, I was nervous. My mom told me I had talked about it for months and months, and Tommy had tried to Tommy and my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, they had kind of pushed me to try to make a go of it. I was 21, so I didn't really have anything to lose, and. My mom told me that if I quit my job, she was going to kick me out. And
really?
Thankfully, she didn't. Yeah.
So you got to stay at your family's place and still pursue your dream right there. But it obviously had to have been stressful, huh?
It was. But I knew even if the race car thing slowed down or didn't work, I'm mechanically inclined. I can change brakes on your car or whatever I needed to do to make some extra money. And thankfully, it didn't come down to that because I tried to. Try not to work too hard.
Right. Well, So with that stuff being said right there, so obviously you started, you went out on your own. You were able to do that. I know it hasn't been all sunshine and rainbows and perfect, but I mean, you know, you guys can see in the background, like you've obviously, you've done very well. You've been very successful. It didn't happen overnight, but let's talk about that. Like what, I mean, what's been the thing that you've been the most excited to sell, and what's been the thing that you're like, I'll never sell that again. Like I'm over that.
Man, honestly, like anything modified related, I try to steer clear of. Y'all's parts are too heavy. Your wheels are heavy. Everything about a modified is just not my, doesn't fit my, not my mojo, I guess.
So then I guess you're really out on stock car stuff because they're like twice as heavy as modified.
Definitely no stock car stuff.
Okay, so we're strictly late models here.
I try to be.
I got you. Even if things are hard, like would you venture out if you had to, or yeah, or are you going to change brakes on cars and hustle, side hustle
I think we'll probably move on to modifieds before we start doing that.
Okay. I got you. Well, again, let me dip back into what Mikey had for us. What's let's start talking about your racing and stuff along the side of the part sales. So you raced a four-cylinder for a year, correct?
Yeah, for 1 year.
And then you decided to, did you trade it or sell the four-cylinder to get the B-mod?
So I sold it, and then the B-mod, I had a street car, you know, like a hot rod or whatever. Right. I traded it for a B-mod and a trailer and, like, you know, everything I needed to go do that. A guy was getting out and I was getting in, so it worked out for about 10 laps, I guess.
what ended up being the cause of the breakthrough on that?
Nothing really. Like, we took it to the racetrack one night and I made some laps after the races, and like we sat in the stands and watched the B mods wreck all night. And I mean, some of them guys I think put 3 front bumpers on in one night, and I decided that probably wasn't for me.
So we stepped from four cylinders to late models. Real quick, if you don't mind me asking, I know it's kind of a personal question, but way back then, how much did you sell a four cylinder for? Nothing.
I think a four cylinder back, that was 2014. I feel like it was like $2,000.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I guess that's kind of the same market today, huh? I guess that's what you could buy or sell for.
It was a pretty trick Saturn.
Okay.
It had a wrap and everything. It was sweet.
I asked you this off camera though, but you weren't a traditional bang banger guy. Like, you didn't just sit in the pits and see if she'd hit the chip and everything.
No, huh? No. We didn't hit 9,000 until we got on the racetrack.
Okay, but you did hit it on the racetrack.
Every chance we get, yeah.
Did you feel like it was good racing? Like did you enjoy the four cylinder days, or was it something that you were like, man, I got to get out of here. Like there's something more to racing than this.
Well, like the ultimate goal is to race a late model, you know. But actually, like, there's still days, like, you know, like we have I can't say bad words. If we had a bad night at the racetrack, you know, there's a lot of times like, man, you know, racing something like that, that'd be fun again. But
yeah, it feels like sometimes, I know, especially in our class, when you start beating and banging, it's man, we can wreck those way cheaper than we can these things.
For sure. Yeah.
So, well, with that being said, what was your first late model? What'd you get?
Actually, I wasn't even in the market for a late model at the time. I was in the market for a pickup truck. I wanted an old Chevy Dually. And a guy that used to race at our local track in town had one for sale, and the only way he'd sell it is if I bought his whole deal. I thought, man, there ain't no way I can afford a late model, and let alone the guy had two. And I went down like 4 times and looked at this truck, and the more I looked at it, the more I wanted it. Didn't even really want the race car stuff. But he, I guess, priced it for one of them deals you can't pass up, and we ended up I got a truck and 2 crate cars. I sold one and I kept one. It was an old Rayburn car, which, if you're not familiar with the race car stuff, it's like the most ill-handling race car you can drive.
Was it Z-Link? What was it back in the day? And real quick, I promise, Mikey's going to get on me for saying this, but will you please get just a little bit more on your microphone
so we can hear you? Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you're good.
But was it Z-Link? Was it leaf spring? What was it?
She was a swing arm, which is like a Z-Link deal. Yeah.
Ill handling, huh?
Ill handling. Terrible. Toting the left front, jump.
Oh, yeah. Wicked fast.
If you want to call it that.
So how long did you keep that before you decided, like I need better equipment or different equipment? Like what was the selling point on it?
The selling point? Well, I drove it for the one season, and then, like, the last two nights of the year, we really wrecked it, like, really bad back-to-back, and it was time for it to go.
Really? So what'd you get after that? Was that the kryptonite stuff? Did you start there?
I got an older rocket car. Okay. And ran it for 2 years. The kryptonite stuff, that was like down the road, yeah.
Gotcha. You like the rocket stuff though, huh? You were happy with it for the time being.
Yeah, I had one like really good car that I probably shouldn't have got rid of as quick as I did, but if it's not bolted to the floor, it's for sale, so.
Jeez. Well, like I said, I'm going to dip back into this right here. Along the, like, during that time, who was your racing hero? Like when you started super late model racing, like, who was the guy that you looked up to or that you wanted to race against at some point?
Oh, it's always Shannon Babb.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess he's a local, not really a local hero. He's a national hero, but he's local to you guys, so.
Yeah, he is.
What about Shannon Babb was like what made him your hero?
You really want me to tell you?
Yeah, I'd love to know.
Giant balls.
Okay. See, he was from the Scott Blomquist era too, like later on in that, correct? Like,
yeah, like his prime was probably like 2010-ish. I mean, he's still good. I mean, he just beat me for $5,000 a month ago.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, he grew up, or not grew up, this is his home, like this is his area, so you got to constantly watch him whip everybody at Summer Nationals and things like that, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is it, obviously that, but like, what about his driving style? I guess, tell us more about it. Like, what?
Man, there's just nothing cooler than seeing Shannon Babb, like, rip the fence down, spoiler hanging off. I mean, just, not a care in the world. Just getting it.
Well, up until that point, going down that road, when did you win your first race in a super late model?
My first race in a super late model was, I guess, 2017. Yeah, 2017. Second year I raced late models, yeah, at Belleville.
Really? And was it a how much did it pay? Like what was it? Was it a big deal for you, or was it like we got one, like move on? Like, what'd you think?
No, it was actually I forgot what the race was, but they had a race after the super late model feature for like everybody that hadn't won a feature in, I don't know, the recent time, whatever. And there was still like most everybody that was in the normal feature. And we started on the pole and won. And it paid more than the regular late model feature to win. I think it was $2,000.
Oh, really?
Made that night, yeah.
Well, that's very interesting to me. That along the lines, you won your first race. Did you think at that point like I've made it? Like I'm the man now. Like I'm ready to go run World Outlaws and stuff like that. Or were you still like, man, since you were in that feature, were you like, eh? It didn't really matter.
No. Actually, after that, we did a week of the Summer Nationals, or thought we was going to do a week of the Summer Nationals, and I think we went and got our tails whipped for 5 or 6 days straight. It was just terrible. I mean, them guys are, like back then, that was like my second year racing late models. So, I mean, they just showed you, like wherever you thought you was, they showed you where you was really at. And then we went to we did Monday through Thursday, and then went to a local race at Tri-City that Friday night, and set quick time and was leading the heat race, and I stuck it in the fence and tore the right front off the car. But racing's really humbling, and it doesn't matter how good you think you are. The next night, somebody's going to let you know that you're not that good.
That's right. Well, so speaking on that right there, so you win your first race, and then you're ready to go run the some of the Hell Tour, and then you realize like, uh-oh. But it obviously made you a better driver. Like it was eye-opening to you, because you went go to a local show and you're that good. Like, did that, was that a turning point where you're like, man, I need to go to more bigger shows to make myself better locally? Or were you like, man, I need to stay away from the big shows and buckle down locally before I go back?
I don't know. I've always liked just traveling and running away from home and doing that kind of thing. I mean, the better people you race with, the better it makes you. It just makes you work harder.
Right. Well, so I think I know the answer to this, but Belleville is your favorite track back at that point. Was that your favorite place to race at?
Yeah, that was probably that's probably our closest track to here. Like, so that's one place like I remembered, you know, going to all the time when I was a kid, and then getting a start. Like, that was the place I first raced a late model. So that was always, I guess, my home track.
Gotcha. Well, what's your favorite track today? Like, if you can only go to one place this year, where are you going?
Probably Fairbury.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
It's interesting.
Yeah, we still, it owes us one, so we're going to go there till we get it.
Well, there you go. I feel like, and maybe you'll probably get it way before we do, but I feel like every time I go to Fairbury, like, it's one of those places that I'm like, what am I doing?
Man, it's just, it's a different place. And they got they do a great job with the track, but it's different every time we go there. Like, you expect it to be one way, and it's, you know, a 180, so.
Exactly. It makes it very hard to be consistent at that place. Like I don't know, it just, it'll keep you up at night. That surprises me that's your favorite.
Yeah. Brownstown, Illinois, like, that's pretty close to me, and that place is always a lot of fun to go to as well. I'm excited to go race down your way, though.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So, speaking of that, some great news. Blaze Burwell will be at the Fall Classic with us February 26th, 25th and 26th right there.
Yeah.
We're super excited about that. That's your first ever trip to Mississippi, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I hope that everybody acts right and you're able to have a good time. Or maybe they act bad and give you some entertainment. I don't know.
We'll find out.
That's right. That's right. Should be pretty good there. I think it'll suit you for sure.
I hope so. I sure hope so.
Well, speaking of Brownstown, we practiced our modified. You went with us. What do you think of being in a modified? I know you hate the heavy wheels and everything else. What about the? You've been in both. So tell me the difference between the super late model and the modified that you could tell right off.
So I think the biggest difference is. Like, cause you all got the same motors that we do, you know. Like, you still got 800 horse. It's just, I think when you take our spoiler and our tires away, like, that's what it drives like. It drives like a late model on four slicks and no spoiler.
Yep. Well, I mean, aside, but I, so it just, it didn't turn as good. It didn't have near the traction. Like, did you feel like it would be more fun to race something like that? Do you feel like it's more competitive to be on something like that, or do you feel like yeah. What was your takeaway on that side of it from a competitive side?
Yeah, I think your guys' stuff races way better. The late model stuff, I mean, everybody's so stuck and everybody's got, you know, the best stuff there is. So it's hard to have a really good race anymore. Like, the mods always race good. I really hope we can get my car done for Thursday, and then we'll let you drive it at Lincoln and see what you think.
Man, that would be awesome. That would be awesome, but
I have to butter you up to get you in the seat, though.
You think so?
I don't know. We'll find out.
I don't know. Yeah, that would be pretty neat, but
that's the goal.
There
as
you go.
As long as the wife will let me go, I think I'd like to go Thursday as well. So
right on. Well, speaking of that, what's your take on Lincoln? Like that? We've never been there, so walk us through Lincoln a little bit.
I haven't raced there a ton. We had some success in the crate stuff back in the day, but I think I've only ran a super there once, so it'll be interesting to see how we line up with them guys.
So you're about on the same scale as we are about going there, huh?
Yeah, and I think the last time I was there was, I think, 2021, so it's been quite a while as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, stepping away from the racing, let's go back to kind of the business side of this. What has been your I asked this question, but I don't think we fully finished it. What has been your favorite thing to sell, and what's been the thing that, like, you're just like, man, that's a nightmare?
Being a kryptonite dealer, I guess, like, I really I enjoy, like, selling our cars and seeing people succeed in our stuff. And, like, you know, obviously we don't weld the frames up, but we do everything, you know, from powder coat on here. So me putting something together from scratch and then watching somebody else go win, it's pretty neat and pretty rewarding.
Really? How many guys do you have in Kryptonite cars that you and Devin are helping, you know, weekly?
Weekly, we probably got, like, realistically, probably 5 to 8 guys, like, that, you know, that rely on us for help.
Gotcha. Well, and I'm not trying to get you to, like, tell us the very ins and outs of it, but to somebody that wants to buy a super late model that knows nothing about super late model racing, like sell us on a Kryptonite, sell us on your program. Like what is it? What would you, if somebody calls up and says, "Hey, I'm looking for a car, but I don't know what I want." Like what do you have to offer with Kryptonite that somebody else wouldn't?
Man, I've been down that road. Like I just think that a lot of these guys you go to, you know, like you're just another phone call and another number to them. And I feel like, and Freddie and Tyler's been the same way with me. Like they'll give you, they'll open their notebook up and give you anything you need to know. And I know if you call some of these bigger places, I mean, they'll just try to sell you a part or sell you whatnot, you know, just to, whatever they got to do to get you off the phone, you know, because they've got 10 more people waiting to answer the same question. It's just, I feel like we got more of a down home, personal experience here. And, I mean, if they can make me run good, then they can make you run good, too.
Well, there you go. There you go. And, man, that's something else. You know, a lot of people are – and I've talked to Sam Mars about this, and you know, we're MB all the way. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, say anything about Kryptonite or MB Custom, but, like, there's a lot of people that are like, if you don't have a Longhorn, if you don't have a Rocket, like, you're not doing it and this and that. Like, there's a lot of Longhorns and Rockets that don't win on a weekly scale. And then, you know, I feel like – the Kryptonite stuff, like I've watched you around local shows, I've seen you win at Peevely, I've seen you, you know, win races, and it's like you don't have to be in those cars. It's about help more than anything. It's tech support. You can have the latest and greatest, but like if you don't have somebody in your corner that cares about you, that's gonna, you know, help you when you need help, like you're out to lunch.
Oh, for sure. Late model racing's got so technical. So I mean, just having somebody to bounce an idea off here and there, I mean that's huge, because I mean it don't take you know, a quarter of an inch here and a quarter inch there to be way, way off. So yeah, it's like you said, it's all about tech support. And it's I mean, you go to a race and there's, you know, 20 Longhorns and 10 Rockets, and it's hard to be better than the next guy when they all got the same stuff.
No doubt. Well, so I guess you said your favorite thing to do is to sell Kryptonite cars. What's your least favorite thing to do? Which I mean, I guess you don't sell it if you don't enjoy selling it. But
yeah, like I like money, so I don't really have something I don't like to sell.
I got you. Which I guess you answer the modified stuff and the stock car stuff.
That was really
going,
that was
going
kind
back
of
through it.
Yeah, I don't.
I got you. What are your plans and goals? Like obviously you're super late model racing. You've got a successful business. Like, have you? I feel like you'd say yeah, you've made it. But like, what are you pushing forward towards? Like, what are your goals?
Man, I'd like to. I don't have any goals to be like a national guy or do anything like that. We did that Mars series last year, and like that was really fun and whatnot. We probably did it like a year early. Like we should have raced, you know, another year or two and then did that thing. And we'll probably do that again and have some more success. It just, like, you get points racing, you got to be prepared. And you got to have, you know, you got to be ready for anything. We wasn't ready. So, yeah, I'd like to do something like that again, just a regional deal and see how we stack up.
Gotcha. Well, as far as business-wise, like, is the goal to have, you know, a shop predominantly full of Kryptonite cars that are consistently being sold, or is it kind of just, you know, again, you're not afraid to sell anything? Like what's the goal in business for you?
Not really, because I mean, there's, you know, like you're never going to make everybody happy, you know, with one brand. So I don't mind to sell, like, what do we got? We got a, you know, a couple Rockets and a couple Kryptonites and a Capital in here. I don't care, you know, what it is. I mean, I'll help anybody with any brand. It's just I'm really thankful we got a huge customer base as it is, and we just keep that going, we'll be happy.
Yeah, so speaking of that, I know you help your Kryptonite customers, but Like if I buy a used rocket from you or a used Longhorn or whatever, like or a new Longhorn or rocket from you, whatever you've got on the floor in here, like you're not just gonna say here's a notebook and go on. Like you're gonna help us as if it's a kryptonite car too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm not as into that stuff as, you know, what we are ours, but anything I can do to help, I will.
Gotcha. Well, stepping back to the racing side of everything, what's been your biggest sponsor to date? Let's talk about some of the people that have helped you get to where you're at. Who's like played the biggest role in it?
So R&R Tire Express is probably that's definitely our main sponsor. They've been with me since I started, actually. And ironically enough, like the sister company, Rent One, it's like, that was my job that I worked before I quit racing. And then they sponsored my dad before I quit working, I should say. And they sponsored my dad like back in the 90s when he raced as well. So they've definitely always been a family friend. And then, like I said, they've been our biggest supporter for sure.
Well, good deal. Good deal. What drives you to be better? Like for you as a driver, like you said, you got a good customer base, you've got a good program and everything else, but like as a racer, like what to you is like, you know, pushes you to be better?
Just getting beat. I mean, nobody likes to lose, and I got a little boy that really, really likes to stand on the roof. So any time we can do that, that's our ultimate goal.
Well, good deal. That's a great answer. But tell us some stories about whenever you've traveled out on the road. Like where's the farthest you've been away from home racing wise?
We went to like Moulton, Alabama. I think that was probably 8 hours. That was far enough. We in like northern Indiana a couple times. Like we've Davenport, Iowa. That was a decent little drive. We've been some places. We got so much racing in Illinois, it's hard to get too far away. You know, it's just opposite of what you got down there. It's, you know, we can race everywhere up here.
Yeah, you're in a premier place. I mean, just like the Mars series and the Hell Tour and all of that, like you're in the premier place. You know, you can go an hour and a half or in an hour and a half radius and just about race anywhere. It's insane. Like you've got it going on. It's hard for me to say, you know, where do you travel to and this and that, because this is where it's at. This is where people travel to.
For sure. Yeah, you got four tracks within an hour and 20 minutes. So it's hard to beat.
Yeah. Well, along your traveling days, what's been your most memorable experience, whether it be good, bad, funny or sad throughout traveling? What's something that sticks out to you?
Oh, man, I got a good one. We went to Shady Hill Speedway. I don't know if you've ever been up there.
I haven't.
Northern Indiana. First time there, we pulled in and we had a big rig, you know, and like everybody was just looking like, wow, you know, that guy must be something. We unloaded, we let the door down, and my crew guy, he's rolling the pit cart out, and the door wasn't all the way down. It was still like a foot up. He flips the pit cart off the back of the gate, like on its lid, all the way over, tools, stuff everywhere. We picked all that up, like, I think until hot laps started. We missed the driver's meetings for picking up tools, right? Mm-hmm. We win the heat race, start on the front row of the feature, and I bet, like, it took us 6 starts to get this feature going. Like, man, why do they keep calling this start back? Because at the driver's meeting at that place, I guess they want you to start at the flag stand. You don't start out of turn 4. And me being the pole sitter, like, I just started where every normal person starts a race. I don't know how many wrecks we caused starting early like that, because the guy on the outside wouldn't go because he didn't, you know, he wasn't firing. We wadded the field up 4 or 5 times. I mean, everybody in the pit area was mad at us before we left that night. We ended up winning, but it was quite the deal.
Jeez. So I guess everybody loved you there. They thought you were professional unloading, and then at the end of it, they questioned that, huh?
Oh yeah, it was a mess. It was a mess. We pulled the car onto the scales, and there was probably like 10 people like waiting to have a talk with me, I guess you'd say.
Well, speaking of the big rig, you told us something interesting about this. Your first big rig that you purchased, you went down to Arkansas to get it, and super excited. And what happened there?
Yeah. So we decided we was going to get us a big toter and trailer and whatnot, you know, and we go down and look at this thing, and I'm just like over the moon, excited to have something like this, you know, and we make the deal with the guy, and we drove down. So I forget who all was with us, but there was, you know, like two people get in the car and leave, and me and my brother hop in the truck, and we get in. I mean, I push the brakes in and turn the radio up. I mean, we're just like, you know, ecstatic. We got this sweet thing coming back to Illinois. We take off out of this guy's driveway, and I mean, we, you know, like I said, we got the radio up. We get to the end of his driveway, and here comes like a dude on a side by side. He flies up beside me. He's like, "Man, stop! What's going on?" And he's like, "You dropped the trailer back there." I'm like, "What do you mean we dropped the trailer?" And I looked in the mirror, and the trailer had never left from where we drove off from. And I had no idea because the radio was, you know, probably at 50 at this point. But the trailer wasn't apparently wasn't latched to the truck. And it didn't want to go back to Illinois with us.
So y'all had to get that fixed before you could bring it home.
Yeah, it was kind of an embarrassing deal. We stood out in the rain and watched this guy put airlines and electric cords and whatever else goes on there. We tore it all in two. But we finally got it. We got back home.
Make sure it's latched now.
That's
for
right.
Sure.
Every time.
Yeah, we had a similar experience I told you about whenever we first got mine. I forget how or why, but we unhooked and then we were hooking back up and we didn't have it latched, and I sent her nose down into the ground, pulled the airlines out of it, had to fix all of that. So I guess it's kind of a common thing with new big riggers.
Yeah, I don't claim to be a truck driver, so. As long as we can make it to the track every week, we're doing something.
That's right. Well, I'm out of questions for you, but if there's anything that you'd like to tell everybody about Burwell Motorsports, you know, you're more than welcome to.
Man, I don't know. I mean, we got a shop full of cars here, so anybody listening wants to buy a race car, you can come on up.
There you go, and plenty of parts for them if you're just looking for parts, huh?
That's right.
Well, there you go. Well, Blaze, we really appreciate your time on here tonight, and we appreciate, again, your hospitality and for allowing us to work out of your shop. We've learned a lot, and we've had some good laughs and entertainment while we've been here. So, again, we appreciate it all.
Hey, I appreciate you coming. We've had a really good time. We get some better luck this weekend, we'll be okay.
There you go. I we can definitely go backwards, but I'm hoping that we can advance. I can advance two spots, and you can just advance one. And
that's right.
Have some wins here this weekend. And I asked you earlier if you win the 44s, is the donut shop going to be opened up?
Donut shop's open. Yep.
Okay. Good deal. Well, there you go, everybody. Blaze Burwell, Burwell Motorsports.
Thank you for listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland. What'd you think about what you heard? Please follow for more content just like this.